Tão bonita manhã, na vida uma nova canção, cantando só teus olhos, teu riso, tuas mãos, pois há de haver um dia em que virás das cordas do meu violão, que só teu amor procurou. Dos beijos perdidos nos lábios.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome, welcome, welcome to the French Connection's Sunday night edition. Today's date is April 15th, 2007. My name is Daryl Bradford Smith, and of course, it is great to have you listeners here with me. We have a very special guest, a returning guest, a friend of mine, somebody who's facing some challenges in his for his freedom. His name is Christopher Bolin, investigative reporter, family man, and friend of mine. In a situation where we want to attempt to drum up some support for what he's facing here in his upcoming court case on trumped up charges. Now we're going to get into some of the anomalies of that case with Chris in a minute. And also we're going to bring on the show today Eric Hufschmidt to do a bit of a roundtable about people coming to the aid of those of us telling the truth. And I want to do a little bit of lead-in here for a couple of reasons. Many people out there, have been trying to slam us, and they wonder why we put people into groups with we don't call everybody a crypto-Zionist. We don't say that. We don't say that everybody's a Zionist. What I do say is some people are not working on behalf of defeating these people. And I'll give you a quick example. When I've told you the story about John Kaminsky, John Kaminsky was somebody who used the word Jew, and he used it liberally and venomously, disparaging the entire race of people from the Jewish persuasion. Now, my logic and my life knew that that was nonsense. Not every person in any group could be guilty of everything that he was trying to sling onto one single group. And I knew that what would happen if he got away with doing that would be that people like myself and others would get tarred and labeled as racist, anti-Semitic, blowhard, possibly arrested, where I live, fools. And I knew right away that people doing this white supremacist, hate the Jews, hate the Latinos, hate the blacks stuff was undermining the work we were trying to do. Kurt Maynard and what would be the name of this other guy, Chris Weingard, or whatever your name is. I don't even know this guy's name. But there's a lot of you out there. And I don't call you guys crypto-Jews because I don't know what your affiliations are. All I can say, ladies and gentlemen, is people like you are going to undermine our efforts completely if you're allowed to continue with this Jew bashing nonsense. Because first of all, ladies and gentlemen, not all Jews are involved. And I have to say that straight up front here, and start getting the facts straight when you read them, ladies and gentlemen, and tell people. If you see a post about us that's not true, counter it with your own facts. Don't let it go read, don't read something and not let it go unchallenged, because our credibility is what's really going to help people to understand these facts. Now, the same holds true with supporting people who are, you know, put their head above the parapet and are facing some serious charges that were trumped up. And that, in this case, my friend and partner, Christopher Bolin, I've been working with Chris for a number of years now. We've got a history here. And I happen to know that Chris got railroaded in this situation in spite of what people like Scott McCufka and others like Piper and those and Petrick and the rest have lied about. The simple fact of the matter is he is fighting for his freedom. So I want to bring him up right away. Chris, how are you, my friend?
Oh, I'm here. I suppose I'm all right. There's a bit of trepidation about my upcoming trial. I'm going on trial, supposed to go on trial April 23rd for two charges in Chicago, in which I could be put in jail for a year.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a year for something that is fabricated. Now, here's the interesting thing that I've discovered, Chris, and it's because you've been so clear when you represented the facts. These people came to your home. They did not announce who they were. You called them yourself. They didn't send a regular unit. They sent this the unit you were complaining about. They wrestled you to the ground, manhandled you, pinned your head, shot you with a taser, and then turn around and blamed you for the entire incident, which is incredible. But the simplest facts are that you're getting railroaded on something that they did to you.
Right. Well, there was a lot of malice, what we call malice. They came in a very confrontational way. They were three unidentified men who came up my driveway, and this was the same group that I had seen going around my house for 2 days. And it was very conspicuous. They were wearing body armor. They were not you couldn't tell who they were with. You couldn't tell if they were police, if they were maybe federal officers or who, or a gang or anything. And they were in the right around my house for 2 days in a row. Most unusual. It was a quiet summer evening, August 14th and 15th. It made no sense. And then when I called 911, we now know, I called 911, which is the number you call to call the police when you have a concern here. And I told the police, I've heard the 911 tape now, that I was concerned about this car. I didn't know who these men were. And they said they would send an officer to my house. When that kind of thing, when you have a non-emergency call about a situation or something you're concerned about, usually the police send what they call a black and white, a regular squad car with a regular officer who, when you see that this man is a police, you're not afraid and you can talk to him. You can say, well, there's this car going around. But instead of that, although the dispatch center had sent a car like that to my house, this team of three guys intervened and they said, Central, send us instead. Don't send that other unit. We'll go.
And is there a documentation of them doing that at Central?
Yes. We finally got the 9/11 tape and the transcript, and it's very clear. And this is contradicted by what the chief of police told us 2 days later. He said that he had sent those men to our house, but it appears that they intervened and said, we'll go. So they came to my house and met my wife on the driveway. My wife and my daughter came out on the driveway. These men came marching up the driveway. All three of them, walking up the driveway like cowboys in the Wild West or what have you, these guys in Baghdad. And they came up my driveway, armed for bear. And my wife asked, who are you? And they wouldn't identify themselves. One pulled out they were kind of perplexed. And they didn't want to identify themselves. And they wouldn't explain what their business was. And they didn't tell her that we're coming for your 9/11 call or your husband's 911 call. And it took us a whole month to find out who these men actually were after this all transpired. I came out of my house. I looked out the window and I saw my wife talking to these men. I thought, oh my God. And I had just gotten home, from the store about 2 minutes earlier. And I came outside and I asked them, who are you? What are you doing? Why are you threatening my house? And they said, we're threatening, huh? And I said, yeah. I said, look at you. And then they weren't going to answer. They didn't tell me anything. I said, look, I have to get my brother. I need some help. I turned to the house and they tackled me. But one of the officers says that, in his report, he says that within a few seconds, he saw that I was being very, loud or something. And he said he unsnapped his holster. And he may have done that. He may have done that in front of me, and then I saw, oh, this is really serious. I better hit my brother. But in any case, they tackled me, and then they threw me to the ground and handcuffed me. And while they knelt on my head, and the other guy was kneeling on my arm, he broke my right elbow. Then they held this taser to my back and tasered me. I mean, this is so over the top. Now, what we found out also is that there was a squad car that had pulled up just before this happened in front of my house and had videotaped it.
Yep.
And this videotape was made by the officer who was originally dispatched to the scene, somebody named Fitzgerald.
Yep.
And he's considered the reporting officer, the arresting officer.
Have you subpoenaed Mr. Fitzgerald?
Well, he's going to be. But the thing is that he was about 25, 30 feet in front of this incident in front of my house, and he would have videotaped it because the department policies mean they have to videotape these things. And he would have videotaped the whole thing. Now, this videotape has now been destroyed.
Mm.
Although I filed an FOIA before I had a lawyer, I didn't issue a subpoena. I didn't know enough about, I had a writer, but I thought my lawyer would do that. But my lawyer, Mr. Smeaton, refused to do any sort of that, proper discovery, which basically, he's a former state attorney, which allowed the police to go through their recycling and destruction of evidence, which is completely against their own policies. But I was in court on Friday, and we had a motion to dismiss the case because of the destruction of evidence, or at least to sanction the state so they could not provide evidence that would have been contained in that video that's been destroyed. And the judge, Hyman Riebmann, He denied that motion. And, the state.
Now, one has to understand that is this a misdemeanor case or a felony case?
No, they're misdemeanors.
Now, misdemeanor case, and I mean, this is a slam dunk dismissal as far as I can see, Chris.
Yeah, but
what's the motivation behind it that you kind of smelled out a little bit here?
Well, the motivation behind it, from the very beginning, before it even happened, I thought that I've always been in fear, because we discovered last year that the FBI was eavesdropping and surveilling us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when we went to Europe in 2005, end of 2005. And this is the thing is that I felt very vulnerable here in this little house because I know that this is where they can keep an eye on me. And when I came back to the States in early 2006, I visited Eric Hofschmidt and people out west and Professor Jones, and they all knew that I was quite fearful and that I was sort of being followed and hunted. And then we were only back here in this house about 10 days actually when this all happened, and I had noticed that there had been a great deal of local police surveillance around my house in the days before this happened.
Mm.
So who's behind it? But I thought that it was either some elements of the federal government who don't like what I'm writing, either Department of Homeland Security under Michael Chertoff. We know that the Anti-Defamation League, the ADL, has been calling me an anti-Semitic journalist since 2001.
Yep.
They don't like what I write about 9/11. So I have there's a few people there that have influence with the police. Both of those agencies, the ADL and Homeland Security, have direct correspondence with police forces around the country.
Yeah.
So in which case they might say that Mr. Bolin is a right-wing extremist or a left-wing extremist or a anti-Semitic extremist, what have you. They often use this word anti-government. And this word anti-government pops up in the police report time and time again, actually in one sentence twice, that I'm an anti-government guy working for an anti-government newspaper. And so they, not anymore, but I'm not anti-government. I'm not anti-anything. I'm pro-American, and I think that the truth about what happened on 9/11 and what's going on in these awful wars needs to be revealed. I mean, that's all.
Well, Chris, here's the situation. You've got 12 people going to be sitting in judgment of you, at least for this round, unless you have to appeal. But did you go through the process of picking these jurors, or was this just random, or are they stacking the deck as far as you can see?
Well, the jury selection, I think the whole trial starts on St. George's Day, April 23rd, which is Monday after this one, after tomorrow, and the jury selection, I think, begins there. From my understanding is that that's the beginning of the trial. There'll be jury selection, and my judge, my lawyer thinks it'll be a one-day or a two-day trial at most. But I have there's some people in Chicago, some supporters of mine, people who are very interested in pro se representation, which is very hard here.
Yeah.
Pro se is very hard. The deck is really stacked against you.
Well, and pro se oftentimes the judge doesn't give you any. I mean, if he's going to be a very if he's going to be a judge that's going to give you leeway, that's one thing. But if he's going to go by the book, it's going to be real hard to be pro se, huh?
Yeah, because they can just ask one question, you don't understand one word, and I've seen it before. I've seen many of these Hispanic and poor people in the court trying to represent themselves, and they don't understand one word. And their cases, you know, motions denied, or they get the short end of the stick. So I could see, you know, it's hard enough for a trained lawyer to represent you. And it's interesting that when I was in court most of the day Friday, I learned, through a source close to the state's attorney's office that, a couple of Jewish guys who work for the state attorney's office want to try my case because of my anti-Israel, that's their quote, anti-Israel writings. So it's like the state attorney's office, a couple of guys, I heard these names, I think it was Rubenstein and Gerber, that these people in the state attorney's office want to try my case. They don't want to try my case because of my resisting arrest charge or my aggravated assault charge. They want to prosecute my case because of my writings.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I told my lawyer, I said, this is outrageous. I got an email, a voicemail message to him. I said, this is outrageous. This shows you the malice. I mean, my attorney's a wealthy attorney, of course, and he's a nice guy, but he's a kind of a, he told me he likes Bush. And I said, you know, he doesn't understand a lot of this, what's going on. He's maybe naive about these political realities, but I said, you know, this shows where the malice is coming from. You know, and why should I be prosecuted because of what I've written when the charges have nothing to do with what I've written?
Yeah. Well, you know, here's what I'm hoping to do. We were successful when you first got arrested. I heard early on what happened, and I was able to make some calls around the world to get a lot of pressure put on the police department to to respect your rights while you were there. And I know that we were successful at some level, and there were a lot of calls that went into that police department. I mean, I think hundreds of them, maybe even thousands.
Yeah.
Now, that same kind of pressure can be brought to bear once again here, but in a different way. And I'm hoping, I'm going to bring up Eric right now, because Eric has been talking, we've been talking a lot, Eric and I. Eric, are you with me?
Yes, I'm here.
We feel like we're out in the breeze here, you and I, and they've really turned up the heat against our facts. And they're trying the best in this so-called Patriot Truth movement to discredit us. I told Chris before this interview here, now they're even calling my mother a whore. And they've attacked my wife, and I mean, come on, it's getting pretty outrageous.
Yeah, but the people that fall for those insults are not really going to help us. I mean, if they can't see that the difference between insults and serious information, you know, forget about those people. That's what I would say. I mean, people need to realize
of the amount of effort they're really putting in to knock us out of
the
box.
Yeah, that's what it shows. They're desperate, and they have no real information. So all they're doing is trying to use emotional manipulation. And if people can't see that, we're in trouble. Because if they had something serious, they'd say it. They would have done it long ago. They're not waiting for the right moment. They would have done it long ago. They've got nothing. And then people, what really annoys me is that you'll hear people repeating over and over. I don't remember the expression how it works, but it's something like, first they came for the Jews, and then I didn't do anything. Then they came for the Muslims. Well, this is exactly what we have right now.
Yeah.
They're coming for people like Boleyn. They arrested him. They put him in jail for nothing. And and people, if they don't realize this is what you could say the start of their attempt to clamp down on all of us. And if they get away with this, if they can arrest a person and put him in jail for nothing, it's a sign that they have total control, not only of the court system, but the American people don't care, the police don't care, the military doesn't care. If they get away with this, it's a sign that we are on our own, and it is time, it's time to fight back. We have no other option.
Well, Chris, I think you'll agree. I've always felt like we were really out here dangling in the breeze. I remember back when people were digging through my rubbish cans and stuff. When I said that to people, they said, "Ah, you're crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Something wrong with you." And I said, "Well, you know, no, I'm not crazy. And the simple fact is, where is the support that we expected? Now,
yeah,
maybe I'm wrong to expect support. I would have thought differently."
Well, one thing is that we've given a lot more thought to some of these things like 9/11 and what's going on than maybe the average person. And then, you know, by digging and working on this for several years, of course, but then also my research, our research, the work we've done on 9/11, we're avant-garde. We're ahead of the wave. We're ahead of the rest.
Yeah.
And the people are catching up though. You see, there's, you know, you hear that lady, the Irish lady on TV, I forgot, Rosie McDonnell,
yeah.
Rosie O'Donnell, and she's coming out and saying things that, you know, we've been saying for 5 years now.
Mm-hmm.
But it is coming into the mainstream. But it takes time, and you know, being avant-garde means that you are out there ahead of the guard, and in that position you are very vulnerable.
Yeah.
And a person like myself, Eric, you guys are very fortunate. I'm maybe less fortunate, and they have, you know, they took me at my most vulnerable place, at my home.
Well, I think part of the problem, though, is that certain cities they have more control over.
Yes.
And if you look at Chicago, and Toronto is turning out to be this way, too. If you look at Toronto, the Bronfmans, the Reichmans, you got the Gilmores, Peter Munk, you got a whole group of them over there, and they seem to have total control of Toronto, Chicago, New York, and it may just be that the reason they haven't done anything to me yet, they don't have Santa Barbara.
Right.
At least not under as much control. Let me put it that way.
Well, if you've been following French politics, it looks like Nicolas Sarkozy's taken over here, and I told my father-in-law today, I said, you know, I worry about my freedom with this guy coming in because he's a Bush lover and he's bringing in the voting machines and, he's bad to the bone and I'm going, uh-oh.
Well, see, here's the voting.
Bringing voting machines, did you say?
Oh, yeah.
Oh boy, that'll be the end of the republic.
But you
That's
see,
right.
But you see, the voting machine is another one that people don't get. We've got black box voting and a bunch of other people pretending to solve the problem for us. They're saying, Bush cheats, Bush cheats. That's all you ever hear. Bush cheated, Bush cheated. They never tell you, well, they're cheating also. And what they're trying to do is get control. And look at who they are. You'll see they're the same connection to the Zionist group.
Well, and it's interesting. I'll give you guys another one here. This is a real funny one. George Soros coming out against AIPAC. That's like, I mean, come on, guys. Don't you smell the rotten fish here? Oh,
yeah.
Boy. But, you know, see, going back to you, Chris, I want to get some support drummed up. And I'm going to ask Eric to post on the website a series of phone numbers and a series of email addresses of different important places to maybe put some pressure on. And I'd like people not to, you know, to be very respectful, but just inquire about the state of this case.
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to have a press liaison your case?
Well, that's the interesting thing too. Is that the media, of course, what I call the controlled media here in Chicago, they've only written very little about my case when it happened, and they only took the side of the police. They wrote like the Chicago Tribune, which is now owned by Zell, you know, Sam Zell, the Zionist guy. I don't expect any sympathy from them, but. Even before, it was a very pro-police newspaper. And they repeated, they wrote those lies, the police said, without ever asking anything about it, that I had been tasered in order to subdue me. That, you know, they gave the impression that I was this, raging gorilla. They always write that I'm so big and everything, but I was a big raging gorilla and they had to use this awful weapon on me to bring me down, to subdue me. And the fact of the matter is I was held on the ground by two men, one who was kneeling on my temple of my head, the other one was kneeling on my back, and they had me handcuffed and they put this thing against my back and just tasered me for, I call it torture. Yeah. And this is to cause, you know, cause bodily harm. They held it right above my lower back by my spine and just let me have 50,000 volts.
Well, I'm hoping.
I can't live in a country that does that kind of thing and is allowed to do that kind of thing to innocent people. I mean, they kill people every week with this damn weapon.
Well, you know, I'm thinking, Chris, I mean, there are not many places on earth where you can't be, where you are free from that. And I'm urging my European listeners, and we've got 40% of our listenership over here in Europe, to call. And I'll tell you why. When these people doing this are aware that this is an internationally, a known event and that people are watching it from around the world, it does make a difference.
Oh,
and
yes,
it actually shocked the police department to get calls from Australia, New Zealand, France, Germany, Russia. The people were calling from all over the world. And what did they say to you when they found out that you were getting calls from all over the planet?
Well, they didn't talk about it too much, but I heard something that they had gotten some like 5,000 calls in the first day. And they were just, the people at the, when I went 2 days later, and I came in with my arm in a sling, my wife, and we went in to talk to the chief of police. These women that sit there and answer the calls, they said, this is Christopher Bolin. They looked at me, it's like, oh, this is the guy that all this is about. But they, of course, knew me. I ran for mayor here. They should have known I ran for mayor, and I've lived here all my life. But in any case, I have had a great deal of support from supporters in New Zealand, Australia, and England, and across Europe. And it's amazing that so much support has come from these places that, you know, far-flung regions of the British Empire and Europe. It's amazing. I mean, some of my strongest supporters are from Europe.
Well,
yeah,
that's where we're getting most of the activity. The Americans are just sitting in front of their TV set. But you know what people have to realize is why I think they're turning the heat up. Because people, they need to understand this. If you look at what's happened with technology today, take a look at how easy it is to produce CD-ROMs, DVDs, internet pages. They used to have total control over the information because you go back into when World War I was starting. There was really only newspapers, and that was people's only real source of information. They didn't even have that many telephones. There wasn't much of a way to communicate. You look at today, people are burning CDs, DVDs, they're passing internet sites around, and you see what's happening is they have lost control. The Zionist group has completely lost control. The Rothschilds, remember, they bought up, if you look at the Rothschild timeline at I Am the Witness, they were buying up Reuters and other media companies. Remember that?
Agents France Press as well and many others.
Yeah, but see, what has happened is they've got them. They've got the television. They've got the media. But now we are going behind their back, and it's spreading around the world, and there is absolutely no way they can stop it, even if they shut down all of America. Europe is still talking. It's spreading into China, Russia, Japan. And see, what they are in a state right now where I think they realize they are in serious trouble. If you look at things like, just Google something like Zionism, you'll see people all over the place talking about it. And you go a couple years ago, there was hardly any discussion.
Eric, I've said this on the show before, 1,700 hits for Zionism when you and I started doing this.
But you see, you got to put yourself in their position. They realize that they are in a desperate situation right now. If they don't do something quick to get control, they are going to be exposed. America is disintegrating. Our manufacturing is disintegrating. We will not be able to have much of a military when there's not much engineering or technicians or manufacturing capabilities. And without America, Israel just lost its only friend and its only group of attack dogs, really. The only people to protect them. And the only people holding up Europe down is America. America still has bases around the place over there. As this country deteriorates into a third world nation, Europe is going to be released from their bondage. And so the Zionists are in big trouble. And I think what they're going to try to do now is take over as much as possible. And I think that's what they're doing right now with Bush and with that Gonzalez guy.
I think you're absolutely on the spot on with that, Eric. But you know, at the same time, one of the things that we need to do, and this is the listeners have to do this, in order to get this message further afield, we need to secure the people doing the hardest work over here. And Christopher's writings have to be protected, and that means we have to make phone calls, Eric. We have to call these. I'm going to call a couple of times. I'm going to call the mayor's office. I am going to call the court and ask if they're going to have a press liaison for the case.
But I think people need to understand why it's happening and why they want to get rid of Bush so badly and Blair, and if you look at what they're trying to do right now, they're trying to get rid of these people that they're puppets. They're not totally under control, and they're trying to put in hardcore Zionists is what it looks like. They want the Chertoffs, the Rahm Emanuels. They want the hardcore people in there now because they know this is it for them. They don't have much time left.
Well, Eric, they always want to get those people in power, and at the same time, you know, a lot of this corruption in the Bush administration is now coming to the surface. I mean, Paul Wolfowitz, you know, at the World Bank, and Alberto Gonzalez. Well, Alberto Gonzalez was just, you know, doing what Bush wanted him to do. But whenever this kind of thing happens, there's always going to be a second and third candidate who will be, ushered into that position. So, I mean, it's very likely that if Alberto Gonzalez goes down, it'll be somebody like Chuck Rosenberg or Michael Chertoff who will be made Attorney General. Eric's absolutely right about that. They're going to become more likely. They're going to become tougher Zionists than the ones that are there.
Well, yeah, because I don't think they can fool around with puppets, because puppets sometimes backfire or they're not tough enough. And I think they realize they're going to have to stop fooling around. They're going to try to clamp down. If they can get control of our complete legal system, then they can do whatever they want. They'll be able to throw you and me in jail.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens with Wolfowitz. If the Europeans are able to prevail and get Wolfowitz out of there, that'll be a positive development.
Yeah, it's one step in it, and then if we can but that's where I think a lot of the rebellion is coming from right now. It's Europe. The Americans are still very passive and just watching the television a lot.
Yeah, but you know something? I'm going to give you guys a little idea right here. You know, here's how these people work, and you'll understand this, Chris and Eric, right away. The person with the best solutions for France's problems is a man. Now I'm going to tell you what the problems are. The best way to solve what problems there are in France is to get rid of the euro, go back to the nation of France, go back to the French franc, get their invasion of clandestine immigration under control, preserve the culture of France, which is a world treasure. And take back the individual rights of the country as it was before Europe. Now, the only person pushing forward those ideas is this right-winged nut job, Jean-Marie Le Pen. And if I'm telling you right now, the reason he's pushing that forward is because they want to discredit the only good solution for France. Now, what did they do? They married the good solution with a racist madman. And why do they do that? Because they want to discredit that as an option. No other candidate over here is talking about France going back to its own borders and controlling its own budget and controlling its own jobs and the rest of it. You know, France was never in this mess with 13% unemployment and runaway spending and the destruction of its culture until it joined Europe.
Yeah, but I think what Europeans don't quite get is the euro by itself isn't bad. It's who's in control of it. They don't even look at who is in control of the European Union and why they're in control. I think it's an attempt to take over. It's not
an
attempt to help Europe.
But see, Eric, seven out of ten French citizens question whether Europe was a good idea. And the only candidate that's even addressing it is the guy that goes around calling other races names, and they've married him to this whole debate on purpose.
Oh, yeah. But what I'm saying is that what people need to look at is who is in Belgium. Who runs the European Union? They're not looking at the who is behind it. They always avoid the who is behind it. They suppress that. They don't want people to look at who. Who's
right.
behind
the
banking?
The same thing goes for who's behind the European Union, Eric.
That's what I mean.
The European Union was created and founded by also these Fabians and all these internationalist groups like the Bilderbergs, what have you. And this European Union is like Gerald said, it's very unpopular among the French people. But I think that Jean-Marie Le Pen is, I've met him once. I don't think he's such a madman, but I understand that he is seen, of course, as a right wing and a
No, he's the things he says. He does say some outrageous things about Arabs and about Muslims, and some of them are just and ridiculous. And but that's not by mistake; it's by design.
But at the same time, I mean, you know, you're not going to get that. Sarkozy is an internationalist, like you said. He's going to bring in the voting machines, and he's going to bring in the George Bush policies, and be very destructive for France.
Oh.
You know, I mean, and Royale isn't speaking like Le Pen. I mean, Le Pen's position is part of his worldview.
Well, yeah, but you have to see that he's marrying very good ideas with in the next breath, calling names of certain Muslim groups. Look, what they don't understand is that Europe brought in the Islamic peoples in the 1960s and 70s intentionally so that every single country in Europe would have an Islamic minority that they could turn around and hate later, so that they could foment a war between Christianity and Islam. And they've done it perfectly. The Germans got the Turks. The British got the Pakistanis, the French got the Algerians, the Spanish got the Moroccans, I mean, if you go through every single country in Europe, they've got their own individual, different Muslim country. And it's always about 8 to 10% of the population, and they're always using them as the bad guys, and it's to foment hatred between Christianity and Islam.
Well, that's what they do in America, except over here it's with Africans and Mexicans and
Chinese. Absolutely.
And I think the IMUS thing, see, the IMUS thing is a good one. Look at how they blew this out of proportion. Whether IMUS said that on purpose, you know, deliberately, or whether he didn't, doesn't matter. They took advantage of it to manipulate people. They brought the basketball team out to cry on public television. They had their puppets like Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson coming up basically almost crying about how this hurt them so bad. You see, if Imus really said this and he's really a bad person, they would have just quietly said, look, we don't want this anymore. Just get him, find another job. It would have been over with real quietly. Just like when an assembly line worker, you know, is doing poorly, they say, look, find another job. They would have done it quietly and said, look, forget it. But they didn't. They made a spectacle out of it. And it's a way to create fights. And what people don't even realize is the children in America are growing up with those expressions. Where do you think they came from? It's in the music. It's on MTV. The children in my neighborhood talk like that sometimes because they're repeating lyrics from the music.
But Eric, in the same breath, Ann Coulter is on the airwaves not long ago calling Arabs ragheads and
well, that's okay. You're allowed to call them ragheads and towelheads and sand niggers. You can call.
Yeah, that's a horrible one. But
they do it. It's all over the place. Have you ever heard anyone get in trouble for calling them sand niggers?
No.
Never.
No.
And then you can call for the bombing of Iran. You can call for the bombing of North Korea. You can call for bombing of the rest of the Middle East. No one says anything.
Exactly.
And if you can do that, why can't we say we need to deal with the Israeli terrorists, we need to bomb Israel? What is the difference? Why can we bomb Iran but not Israel? Why can we call for the bombing of one nation, but certain nations are off the, we're not allowed to touch them?
Well, you and I and the listeners know why that is, and you don't have to go very far. Eric, you put up that Dutch documentary yesterday about APEC, and I got to tell you, you will vomit, listeners, when you watch that. I mean, I know some of it's in Dutch, but most of it is interviews in English. Your stomach will be sick after you watch this. And if you thought for a minute some of our research wasn't accurate, when you're done watching that Dutch documentary, you're going to know we've been spot on with everything.
Yeah, and the Dutch documentary doesn't even go all the way either.
No, it doesn't. I mean,
it's only touching.
Eric, you know something I said this to Barry Turner today. I was talking to Colonel Barry Turner today. And I said, you know, Barry, if I knew right now what I really don't know, I mean, if I knew now, today, this minute, what I don't know, I would be shocked. Because, Chris, how can you know this story? It's huge. I mean, all we can do is chip away a little at a time to get this stuff out. But I got to tell you something. This thing is big.
Yeah, and I think people have to start thinking about their future and stop just ignoring this. They have to start asking themselves, what do they want with the rest of their lives?
That's right.
We don't live forever. Do we want this war to continue? When are these so-called liberals going to figure out that they the people they just elected don't want to stop the war at all.
Well, Eric, you know, the interesting thing is that the Democrats, you know, their caucus is being run by Rahm Emanuel, whose father was an Irgun terrorist.
Yeah.
His father, Dr. Benjamin Emanuel, is still in Chicago. I didn't want to talk too much with me about his Israeli background or what he did, but Sherman Skolnick, who is a pretty reputable source, the late Sherman Skolnick, said that he was actually involved in the murder of Volker Bernadotte. But there's no question that he was, you know, working with Menachem Begin as a terrorist, as a Zionist terrorist. Now, this man's son, Rahm Emanuel, is a very high-level guy in the Democratic Party. He determines what will be the focus and the caucus of the Democratic Party. Now, the reason the Democrats want to bring the troops out of Iraq is because they want to have them for the next mission in Iran. Or some other place.
And also, they're going to leave them there until Iraq is totally destroyed.
The Democrats are not against the war because it's an illegal, unjust war. Very few have that moral compass. They're looking at it in pulling them out of Iraq because Iraq war is unpopular with the world and American people. But pulling them out of Iraq, they've already made a mess of that country, and having those troops ready for the next mission.
Well, the troops listen. The Iraqis that are left in Iraq, especially in that Baghdad central region, all those people are going to die a young death anyway, and their children are never going to mature to a full lifespan anyway. And anybody who's stuck in that cesspit of a nation now that was a first world nation, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, Iraq was a first world nation, not a third world, first world, like U.S., had better streets than America, better schools that the government paid for the university students if you were smart enough. You have no idea that the kind of mess we made of a first world country. And today, if you live there, you're virtually guaranteed to die young.
Well, I think that was, like Christopher Bolin wrote in the article, that it was by design to destroy it. It's not to help.
Okay.
And the Democrats don't get it. The people that call themselves Democrats are so stupid. They don't get it. They vote for Bush thinking that Bush is the bad guy. They've been tricked into this thinking that Bush is the bad guy and the solution is to vote for Democrats. And they still don't get it. And they were just demonstrating yesterday, a Saturday on the 14th of April. There are a bunch of these liberals. I'm sure they're all liberals out there demonstrating to help bring in a global carbon tax to help save us from flooding by global warming. I mean, most people would say, stop the taxes already. We're sick of these taxes. These people were demonstrating yesterday that they want a carbon tax.
Well, there's a push on, and I hate to jump from subject to subject, but this is a global push. Over here in France, they are pushing on the television sets that we're having a drought. And Eric knows that my whole yard is in flood state. But they're talking about metering our wells, and they're talking about France not having enough water. Now, if you've just spent the winter I spent here, this place has been inundated with water. And on TV, they're pushing that we're in a drought status. My well is overflowing into my street.
Well, it's the same thing with global warming. You know, this Midwest had the coldest February in 40 years, 30, 40 years, and Al Gore is talking about all this global warming. At the same time, the liberals, if you will, are talking about the crisis in Darfur, which most people can't even locate on a map of the world. But there's this genocide going on in Darfur when there's no discussion of what's happening in Gaza, what's happening in Iraq or Afghanistan. These are crises of our making, yet rather than any focus on the crises that we've produced, that we're making, they always want to point the finger at some distant place where there's a terrible situation we should do something about.
Yeah, and see, with global warming, what people have to realize is we don't even know what's going on with the sun or with the weather, and we're not going to solve a problem we don't understand by adding a tax to ourselves. This is so stupid. I mean, tax us, who's getting the money? Nobody even asked. Again, they always avoid the who. Who is going to get this money, and what are they going to do with it?
Well, you know, I don't want to jump out of this subject either, but the John Jui in the Darfur region, Christopher, I just got some information that top-level funding of the John Jui that have been killing these Somalians wholesale in Darfur came from Israel, and they're Israeli-trained murderers.
I don't
know. Now, I'm following up on that story, looking into how that all came together. But And there are actually Americans on site over there as well training the Jean Jury.
Yeah, well, you know, that they have to have some reason to try and, you know, take a position, take a part of, Sudan, which is a huge country. I think Darfur is the size of France.
Yep.
And if they could lop that off and call that a United Nations protectorate of some sort, you know how the British used to do. The British created Kuwait as a British protectorate. Now we have Kosovo, the first example of a United Nations protectorate, or East Timor. And if they can do the same thing over there, then they can have a United Nations protectorate where international oil companies are able to, take advantage of the resources in Darfur.
That's right. And the public gets nothing because they've either been killed off, starved off, or marginalized. And these people go in and just 100% profit.
Yeah, and you find the same players. You find these international and European oil companies. I mean, Carl Bildt, for example, Lundin Oil, they had claims down there. There's a lot of companies that have claims in Sudan in their oil. And Darfur has a lot of oil.
Yeah. Well, when they're done there, they'll go into the sands of Chad, and then they'll go over to Malawi, and they'll make their way across Central Africa. And
well, yeah,
it's amazing,
it's a rape of the planet. It's a rape of you can consider it that way. They're just raping one nation after the next.
Yeah.
And Americans always think, well, it's not us, it's in the Middle East. Well, it is us. It is our nation. This place is falling apart. We could be making it better. It's getting worse and worse and worse.
Well, gentlemen, I really want to make sure that every listener that does download this file and puts it to memory makes an effort, please, makes an effort to get Christopher's information written down and then act on it. I need everyone to act on this. This is important stuff. And I, you know, his freedom is involved here. His honor is involved here. His security of his family is involved here. If this were happening to you, you would want me and Eric and Bolin to come to your aid. And certainly, if there was somebody in our listening audience that was having this done to them, we would come to your aid.
It's also a sign of what could happen next to us. This is not a Bolin problem by himself. This is Chertoff, and this is the ADL. This is them coming after Americans and using the American police as attack dogs, just like they're doing with the military, fooling them into killing Arabs.
That's right.
Exactly.
And the police need to be aware of the fact that they're being used, and they're not benefiting from this. They have to live in the same country as the rest of us. Their children have to grow up in it.
You know, Chris, Holly is watching that happen with your daughter there, and I mean, your family, your neighbors, this is your hometown. I mean, I grew up in a town not dissimilar, to where you are now, 17,000-18,000 small bedroom community, middle class. And I can imagine, having my new, SWAT team, leader from my little hometown, which they do have a SWAT team in my hometown, God only knows why, arriving at a front door of my house, acting like I don't know what.
Yeah, and this is post 911 reality in America. We now have a federal police force, in which the Department of Homeland Security, is able to, demand the cooperation of state and local authorities if they want to get federal money. I wrote a little article about this recently. This recent Future of Terrorism Task Force in the United States, in which the first point they say is that we will have worse terrorist attacks in the next 5 years in this country. But what's interesting is that the people who wrote this report, the experts that they relied on, were two Israeli generals who basically are Mossad, Israeli intelligence people. These are the people who are informing the United States, Homeland Security, about domestic terrorism and what's in the cards for the war on terror. That's what people don't understand in this country, that the war on terrorism is nothing more than a Zionist construct that's been plotted and planned for years. And we're falling victim to this. We're allowing this nonsense to fly, and we're enabling this war on terrorism to go forward. In that respect, George Bush and Cheney are culpable because they have swallowed this nonsense hook, line, and sinker.
Well, it's being spread over here too. They're starting to say that there's a new cell in Morocco and in Algeria, an Al-Qaeda cell that's threatening France.
Yeah. I know. I've seen those bombs recently. It's the same thing, you know, is that these mad bombers are everywhere. But it, what's amazing is the mainstream media will always refer to it as a suicide bomber. When you read it carefully, it's a car that blew up. A car blew up. Now, why would a suicide bomber, if the car's going to blow up, why would he just sit there inside the car and let go with the car, blow himself up? It makes no sense at all. You know, they use this term suicide bomber very loosely and very imprecisely now because they want to give you the impression that the people who are doing these bombs are homegrown crazy Muslims or Arabs. When 9 times out of 10, I dare say, these are Mossad or British intelligence or American intelligence. These are the bad guys who have parked a bomb someplace and blown it up remotely.
Well, plus, Harari comes to mind.
Plus these bombs are too big to be something that an Arab by himself, you know, some with no real resources could even make. You can't make bombs that big in your garage.
Right.
They're way too big, much too big. And anybody knows police need to tell them is, do you realize how fast this we could put an end to this? If the police in this country would wise up, in one day they could just start arresting these people. Larry Silverstein, the Bronfist, we got the evidence. People need to realize we don't have to live in fear, this fear-mongering that you get from Alex Jones and the others. We don't have to put up with this. In one day, it would be over with. There aren't that many of them.
Eric's right.
One day. And if it gets to the point where they start putting people in jail, I mean, the citizens should start considering that we're going to have to do it by ourselves.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing that I've always thought was something somehow protection for me is that I thought logically that 99.9% of the population wants the truth about what happened on 9/11. They want to know the truth about what happened in these wars and what's going on. And of course the bad guys, it's a very, very, very small group of people who are behind 9/11. Yet this very small group of people is also very highly connected with the media, obviously. So then we're talking about the same group of people.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, but like Eric said, it's a very small group. And if we stand up, if Americans and the people of the world stand up and challenge this.
It's not that hard. I mean, Mike Wallace of CBS, I mean, what is he going to do? Pull out a machine gun and fight us? We can deal with these people. Paul Azan of CNN, Wolf Blitzer, Larry Silverstein, every one of them can be dealt with if we could just find some support. And you know, it's a good possibility that a lot of the police would stand back if they saw anything happening. They'd say, good riddance to them. Just pretend we don't see it.
Well, I don't know if I would go that far, Eric, because,
well,
I mean...
Well, it will be either that or they're going to end up dead, too, because...
Well, the police, look at the thugs that they're hiring to do this job.
Yeah, but you see, those are the ones that are going to end up going, too, because if it gets to the point, think about it, if it gets to the point where this whole economy is collapsing, people like Bolin are in jail, we don't have much left. At that point, the ship is sinking so bad, we may as well take matters into our own hands. If it gets to that point... People have to realize it. Just think about it. They need to think about this. Look back at history. You'll see this thing going on all the time. There's a point at which it's gone. It's over with. They're coming after us. The fight is on. And I think they're getting to that point. That's why I think they want to get rid of Gonzalez, and they're trying to get rid of Bush, and they're trying to get rid of Blair. They're going to start putting in their hardcore people. It's at the point where they don't have any way to stop this. You see, you look on the internet, they can't stop the information any longer.
That's right.
And they're being exposed everywhere, and you can see the desperation.
And well, we're not going to quit. I tell you something, I'm in this for the long haul. I just want my health to hold up so I can keep doing it. But as long as I can still draw a breath, guys, I'm not going to let the facts fall on the side here. We got to bring them up.
You're having a great effect. I know that. I've gotten a lot of email from people, supporters, and said that they came around to understanding the world from listening to you. So you are having a great effect.
Well, you know, Chris, I am not a principal in a lot of the research. I am a guy who collects from great sources, and one of the things that I've always had on my side was that I'm genuinely interested in winning this battle, and the only way we can do that is with honesty and forthrightness. And here's the thing: if we go down this road of white supremacy stuff, which a lot of these people want us to do,
we're going to be easily marginalized, and someone else is going to take the reins of control, and that will be the wrong guy. I'm sure of it.
Well, yeah, you can see that with this Imus thing. All you have to do is make the wrong expression. And I mean, sure, Imus was a little bit extreme, but think about it. You just make one word, say the wrong word, and there's a publicity campaign against you. And this is what Jim Condit is better start understanding, because he is associating with these people and defending them.
Yeah.
And there's a point at which Jim Condit had better start realizing that he either gets away from these people, or we're going to have to start wondering what is his problem and what is he doing.
You know, Eric, I'm not going to go that far because, you know, I know Jimmy. You know Jimmy.
I know, but I've talked to him time after time, and he keeps playing. I don't know. Well, if he doesn't know, that leaves him open to – people have to realize this. If somebody really doesn't know, that leaves him vulnerable to being taken advantage of. This is what happened to Jimmy Walter.
Yeah.
They took it. They just ripped him off. And even though we told him, watch out for Nick Levis, he didn't listen. And what did Nick Levis do? He sabotaged his meeting, and they ended up throwing him out. But it was too late. He already sabotaged it. And it's the same is true with Jim Condit. If this guy doesn't get it, who's working with him? Where are those names going that he's collecting for people to do the precincts? Who's getting the money? Who is influencing him? If people, you know, there's no point in giving help to a clueless person.
Well, I want Jimmy to be part of this fight because I believe he's sincere.
Here's the problem.
Maybe part of it is my fault for not staying in closer touch with Jimmy because I know that Jimmy has an interest in the truth. So maybe I need to redouble my effort. But, you know, factually, guys, I've been kind of off on my back a little bit here for the last month and a half.
Oh, I know, but it's not your fault. I'm just saying the people, they need to be careful who they follow, because if somebody's clueless, that is dangerous. That is really dangerous. The guy is, he supports Mark Glenn, Mark Farrell, Mike Piper, the American Free Press, Willis Cardo. I mean, you go down the name list, every single one of them is turning out to be part of this strange white supremacist Nazi group, which seems to be under the control of Zionists.
Well, somebody, I'm gonna bring this up with Chris and with you. Listen to the David Duke story and him trying to become mainstream now. But I know as a fact, two grand wizards of the South turned out to be from the Jewish community. They were crypto Jews. They were outed ultimately in their organizations, but they were in charge of their group for some time. They turned out to be Jewish. This is all part of the record, ladies and gentlemen. And the simple fact of the matter is that you can't have that kind of belief system. Most people don't believe that way. There are people who hate other races because they've got something wrong.
Well,
with
that's
their brain.
But you see, it's part of this is human nature. All races segregate. All of them. Black people, Chinese people, they all do it. It's part
of
human
nature. I don't hate them for it.
No, there's not hate. It's not hatred. It's a natural thing for people to segregate with each other. That's not racism. But what these people are doing is they're taking that and turning it into what appears to be some inborn hatred. You see, what they're doing is they're stirring up the hatred.
Like but, Alex Jones does with Latinos.
And Chinese. Yeah, he does it with them and the Chinese.
Yeah.
And you see, the white supremacists, what they're doing is they're creating the impression that there are some people, some white people out there who have some inborn hatred to black people. And this is ridiculous. Every race does associate with its own, but there is no group of white people anywhere with this natural inborn hatred of black people. They are creating that impression. They're fooling people.
Yep, that's true.
Because if you look at black people, you'll see they tend to associate with each other. I know a person whose father is black, his mother is white, and his black relatives won't even talk to the kid or the family anymore because they consider him a traitor marrying a white person. You could say they're black racists. But, you know, there are racial tensions in America, and people do segregate by race, but that, what these people are trying to do is create, they're fooling you into thinking that there's a subhuman species around here, that this monstrous species simply hates people because of their skin color or because they're Jews or whatever. And this is what people are being fooled into thinking we need hate crimes to protect ourselves from these people. And these people don't exist. There are no such things.
No, and when they don't get a group to do that, They ship in their own leadership. They fund it through the Southern Poverty Law Center. They get a guy who's a grand wizard who comes from the Jewish community, or they get a guy who's an Al-Qaeda named Perlman and switches his name to Ahmed Flachmed, and all of a sudden now you've got a bad guy from the Jewish community acting like, come on, this deception is so clear. Read the, people need to do the homework. Now, I don't know, maybe it's because people don't have the time or television's more interesting. I don't know. But
well, it's like you said with Kaminsky. They come out looking like they're some rabid, hateful people. But you look around you, where are these people? There are none. We're all human. There is no subhuman species out there that has some inborn hatred to another race.
That's right.
And this is what they're fooling people. And then they justify all these laws because we've got to protect ourselves from these Nazi supremacists. This is nonsense. All of these people, Mark Glenn, Mark Farrell, the whole group.
That's right.
We got to watch out for this group. They seem to be the ones creating it.
And then half of them are anti-homosexual, but they're quasi-gay.
Well, that you know what it's turning out to be is the best way to hide something is to make it look like you're against it. It's a really good trick for people because if you see somebody ranting and raving about homos and pedophiles, you think to yourself, "Wow, that guy he really doesn't like them." You would never think to yourself, maybe he is one, and he's just throwing you off course. You see, that's
a
good
trick.
Yeah,
but when you're exposing crimes like we are, Eric, about child sex slavery and whites, women sex slaves and DynCorp, and I mean, you know, I don't stay on any single subject long enough to be in that kind of realm. But I got to tell you, when it comes to kids. You know, you, Christopher looks at his own kids and says, "Holy smokes, I gotta stop them from this."
Well, this is why I think the things they're doing with kids are the reason you get these crazy theories that maybe they're not human, they're reptilians or they're aliens.
It's subhuman that somebody could do that.
Well, that's what some people seriously wonder. Maybe there's an alien force out there, but you know, no, really, I mean, there are people that can just have if somebody 10 years ago had told me that there's people raping little boys, I'd be thinking, oh, give me a break. Who even wants to touch one? Who wants to even look at one?
That's right, and you can't believe it because it's so beyond your thinking that you can't even imagine it, and all of a sudden you're faced with the reality that that's true, and what do you do then?
I think this is why, though, this is another thing that they are having trouble containing. You see, 10 years ago, all we had were the words. We only had people saying, well, they're raping kids at Boys Town, and the words alone don't do it. But then when you start getting the photos that the Internet's allowing, and the CD-ROMs and the DVDs, we're getting photos, we're getting videos, we're getting people talking about it. It's becoming more real now. There's so much evidence, and it's becoming more real. We're getting testimony like Paul Benassi. We have more today than we ever had before, and it's showing people it's not just talk. It's not just rumors. It's really happening.
Yeah.
And I think this is the other thing that they're in trouble with now, because a lot of the things that we used to dismiss as ridiculous are now, with the information we have available, it's starting to look real. It's starting to affect people more.
Well, guys, we've put on quite a show here today. You know, this last time we did a three-way call like this was back in at the anniversary of 9/11, and it turned out to be a heck of a discussion, as it did this time as well. I mean, we bounced around a little bit, but Chris, I want to revisit one more time the fact that I want people to support you with emails and phone calls. And Eric, I want you to do me a favor and find as many ways that they can get in touch with the right people.
I'll give those numbers. We'll give some numbers and information to Eric so he can post it, like how to contact maybe the media in Chicago or the court or what have you. We'll brainstorm, come up with some of those good contact numbers.
But and here's the thing. I want people to be respectful. I'd like you to say that you're interested when you call these numbers to make sure you tell them if you're calling from Sweden. If you, Krister, up there in Sweden, if you're calling from, you know, other places in the European continent or around the world for that matter, make sure you tell people where you're calling from, because it is impressive to a local community courthouse to have calls from around the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it lets them know that this is not a small issue, but rather something that many, many people are you know, deeply connected to.
And it's very important because there might be a few dozen people in the court on my side, but for the judge to know and the court to know that this matter is being watched will make them cognizant that they're being, you know, that this is something they cannot just you know, railroad me, or they can't lynch me, that they're being watched. And it's being watched by an international, you know, group of people, is very important.
Yeah. And of course, we don't want to forget about our American listeners out there. I mean, you are 6 out of 10 of us, and I got to tell you guys, you know, the fight is raging. And if you come across a hit piece on Eric Bolin or myself, challenge it.
Well, all we have to do is look at it and see, is it just insults or is there something?
No, but they need to challenge it, because I'll tell you something. Part of our salesmanship of our work comes from our credibility, and any kind of sliming out there is just making it harder for us to get the truth out.
But all people have to do is just tell people, go look at the site themselves. I mean, you don't have to really fight back when all they have is an insult. All you have to do is tell people, go look at the site.
American Free Press sent out a letter in November of 2006 in which they associated me with a couple of people. I think those were you two. And they said that I had come out and they had a list of about a dozen people that they said I had criticized or offended unjustly. People like David Duke and a whole host of people, half of which I don't even know. But what they're trying to do is, you know, guilt by association. And they were without naming you, either of you, they tried to smear the whole bunch of us. And this is this, they said that I had
Spengollied you into this group.
That I had attacked people like Ted Gunderson, John Stattmiller, Mark Lane, Mark Glenn, Jimmy Walter even, Dylan Avery, William Rodriguez, David Irving, and David Duke. And this is a letter that came from, I think, Chris Petrick. And it was sent out to the people, some of the people whose money they were returning, because American Free Press pulled a real fast one on me. They, collected money on for my legal defense, and then either withheld it or sent it back to people, which didn't do me any good at all. So they basically, and I think, you know, unfortunately, that they did a very, you know, they were out to get me.
And well, we know that, we've done our own little outing of those nitwits over there, but you know what?
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you all for tuning in, and I want to thank Christopher Bolin for coming on today, and we would appreciate your help in his defense. And Eric, of course, as always, you know, our work speaks for itself. So people need an education on what the French Connection is and what Eric Hofschmidt's work is and what Christopher Bolin's work is. Just read it for yourself and do the smell test. If it makes you feel informed and feel empowered, then you know we're on the right track. And just go with that feeling, because, ladies and gentlemen, you know, I put in a maximum effort for nothing here. I got to tell you, nothing. And it's not about becoming famous or money or anything else. It's about wanting a better world, as we described today, and we can all have that. So don't let your guard down. Keep fighting the good fight, and we'll be back with you with more files real soon. Until the next time, ladies and gentlemen, this is Daryl Bradford Smith telling you to be well. Bye-bye now.